I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, George from San Diego.
George, alcoholic. God bless the Freedom Ranch. You know, I want to thank Damien and Larry for inviting me to speak today. I got the call about 1 o'clock this afternoon. And Damien goes, hey, I need a favor. Can you speak tonight? And my training goes back to my sponsor. And I remember him saying, the only answer to that question is yes. So, of course, said yes. I thank Larry because if I don't, I won't hear the end of it. Okay? Anyway, my sobriety day is August 1st, 2002. God willing, and if I do the right things for the next few months, I might get 12 years of sobriety on August 1st. For a person like me, that's hard to say. I will start by saying that I'm not here to give you a drunkalog. I believe that as a speaker, it is my duty to show people what sobriety has done for me. The bad news about that is I decided not to sugarcoat anything anymore. I'm going to shoot from the hip. If some of you guys that know me, that's kind of a joke because sugarcoating has never been my thing. I will give you my qualifications, how I got to stand before you. I am not proud to be an alcoholic, but I am proud to be a member of Alcoholic Anonymous. It's the best thing that happened to me. I started from Puerto Rico. That's where my life started at. I joined the Navy at 19. During high school, I made all the, you know, good teams. I was starting in every basketball team, baseball team, volleyball team, you name it. I had good grades because I always dated the smart, good-looking girls in the crowd. It's cool. You know, they helped me through by either me turning in a blank test and them fixing it for me because they were always teacher's pet, so they helped with that. Or by somehow cheating my way through it. When I graduated from high school, I told my dad, I don't want to go to college. I really don't want to. My dad said, that's fine. You got a year. Within a year's time, you either make more money than me, join the military, or get out of the house. I'm not supporting a bum. Started working as a designer for the government and as a freelance photographer for a newspaper. Of course, at that age, that was heaven. A lot of drinking, a lot of partying. But for me, that was normal. You know, it was normal to have alcohol interfere with your job. Later on, it turned out that my job interfered with my drinking. So something had to be done. But anyway, the year was almost there. I knew my dad was a man of a few words. And I had to do something. So I saw this pamphlet of this Navy brochure said it's not a job, it's an adventure. So I went to the recruiter, and the recruiter had me at, we will pay you. We will give you room and border. We will pay you medical. We will take care of you, and then we'll give you a paycheck to drink and chase women. I was it, you know. The recruiter had me there. I joined the Navy and drank like a fish. But the Navy had one good thing, forced sobriety. When we're out to sea, there's no alcohol. So everything was okay. I became an air combat controller, controlling combat missions, fight aircrafts. I was good at what I did, and the Navy kept patting me in the back and giving me attaboys and giving me rank and giving me more money and telling me what a great guy I was. My ego, which you will know here in a minute, just blew up. Then they did a mistake. After the Persian Gulf War, I was told that they needed me to teach other people, to pass my expertise. So I was stationed in shore duty in San Diego, California. Now, I didn't have forced sobriety anymore, but I had a lot of bars to go to, and I was drinking like a fish. like I said, alcohol started, job started interfering with my drinking. I couldn't control aircrafts with one eye open, the other one halfway, you know, there, and controlling fighter aircrafts over Southern California. So I did what every alcoholic would do. I found a way that I could control aircrafts while having a hangover. I started doing cocaine. So now I was under the influence of cocaine, halfway drunk, controlling aircrafts, and teaching people how to do it. Finally, the Navy caught up with me, and they busted me for it, dirty urinalysis. One thing led to another. The Navy offered me help. I said, F you, and just kicked me out. So they did kick me out. Now, shortly thereafter, I became an entrepreneur. And everything was going really, really good. But then I was busted, and I was charged with gun possession and cocaine dealing and all these things, and they wouldn't let me do what I wanted to do. So I ended up going to do some time. While I was doing some time, the feds picked me up. This is how bad it was. When I got picked up by the feds, I ended up going in front of a judge. And the judge declared me a menace to society, federal judge, and sentenced me to be extradited to Italy to do 44 years in Italy for drug trafficking. I don't do anything small. Either go to the neck with it. So due to a loophole in this extradition and this charge that I was tough, I spent 3.5 years in custody and the last 16 months in a isolation cell because I was not the best person to be around with, praying to God to give me a chance. And I want to share this part with you because so you understand the manageability of my life. I get freed. After 3.5 years, my attorney comes in crying and hugs me, and she tells me, you're free. They messed up. You're going home tonight. Now, I was, from where I was at to 3.5 years, being released from MCC in downtown was where I was fighting my case. I walked out of there. I had $12 in change in my books. They gave me that in cash. I walked out of there, went around the corner. The old San Diego Hotel was there. There was a liquor store in the corner, and I bought a 40 and a pack of cigarettes. I drank the 40 and a pack of, and smoked some cigarettes there, and it tasted really good, so I bought another 40. And that really tasted good. But now I was out of money, and the streets of San Diego was almost midnight. Now, understand, 3.5 years of begging for a break, and I get a break. And less than an hour later, I'm broke in the streets of San Diego, and I see a guy walk by me, stumbling a little bit in a three-piece suit. What to do? There's a 2x4 laying there by the wall. You know, one of those 2x4s I'll never forget that belongs in a pallet. It's got the notches on it. I grab it, hit the guy over the head when he approaches the car, reach into his pocket, pull out $300-some-odd, and go out to my Connect and get high and drink. At one time, I had it going on in that lifestyle. At that point, I was just a gutter drunk. And I started getting violated by the feds, and it got to the point where I got insulted by the judge, and he told me, you're not a drug dealer anymore, you're a junkie. That really hurt me. Then, in the same breath, he tells me, I want you to go to the Freedom Ranch. My first thought is, who the hell wants to go all the way to the shout-out Freedom Ranch up in Campo? God. Okay, that's my qual. That's how I got to the Freedom Ranch. Actually, the way I got to the Freedom Ranch is I kept getting violated. And one day I went to see my PO, and I pissed tested. He goes, oh, you're positive. I said, nah, that's my girlfriend. She's using it, you know. He goes, okay, walk away. When the results come back from the lab, I'll just go and violate you. I got in the elevator. In the federal building, 9th floor, and I took the elevator. And you know that bell at the elevators? I don't know if it was that bell or one in my head went, ding, do something different for a change. I had been introduced to AA a little bit earlier by going to detox at 1111 Island and doing 15 days, 5 days of detox, 10 days at the 10-day program, walking out of there thinking that I was Bill W. I was going to go and save the world. It took me till midnight to have a drink and shoot some dope. Because I told my girlfriend, no, I'm not an alcoholic. I'll wait till midnight before I do it. I'll never forget one of those clocks that the windows flipped, you know, it was a really old one. I was standing there, rigged, shot, waiting, click, okay. That was me. So I was introduced. The seed was given to me of an A there at 1111 Island. God bless that place. So when that bell went off and said, do something different, I pressed a button. I went back to the elevator, told the reception, can you have my PO come back out? And he comes back out and said, Mark, the reason I'm dirty is because I'm using. I got a rig down in the parking lot. I stashed it away, you know, waiting so I can use some more when I get out of here. He goes, wow, you got a problem. You better do something about it. Get into the Freedom Ranch. I said, what? I said, get into the ranch. He said, that's it? He goes, yeah. Do something about it. He turned around and walked, and I'm like, no handcuffs? No forced sobriety? So I got in the elevator, went down, used the dope that I had left, and I went and filled out the application to the Freedom Ranch. I had to apologize later on because there's a rule. You have to have 3 days clean and sober before you do that. But I broke that rule. I was so loaded. You know. But I finished the application. And the Freedom Ranch told me it will be 6 weeks on or about. Call every other day. I'll be damned if I didn't call 2 days later and say, it's your lucky day. No, it's not. Yes, it is. You got to get up here. I don't have a right to catch a bus. I don't have a, whatever you have to do. Get here or you're off the list. Second moment of clarity. Do something different, George. Follow directions. Took the bus ride. Anybody taking a bus ride to Campo, it's about 5 hours. And the bus driver knew exactly where the Freedom Ranch is at. And after the first hour, I kept saying, where's it at? He goes, right around the corner. So now, finally, we're going down Buckman Springs Road. And I'm going, where? If you had to tell me right around the corner where I'm on time, I'm going to sock you. He goes, no, really. The bus stop's coming up here. We pull up to the bus stop. He opens the door. Now, I get out, and I have half a backpack with a couple of dirty underwears and some socks. That's all I own, and some tweaker stuff. You know, we save all the crap. And, of course, my porno was in there and all that stuff. But I get out of the bus, and the heat wave hits me, and it's 110 in Campo. And I go, what the fuck? So when I turn around to get back in the bus, the driver closes the door and waves at me. Goodbye. He takes off. There's no return bus. So I walk down, and all these guys keep coming at me and saying, welcome home, brother, and give me hugs. Not what I'm used to. Not what I want to. My first day there, I see all the smiles going around the ranch. And I'm going, what? They're getting loaded. That's the reason they're smiling. You know? I walk in, do the paperwork. They send me to a famous room 7. It's an oven back there. I get in my bunk bed. I said, okay, I'm not going to last here a week. I'm not going to unpack all my stuff, you know. They give me toothpaste, toothbrush, bar soap, everything brand new, and I'm like stoked. Because I was at the time, I forgot to say that, I was living in the streets. I was actually got kicked out of San Vincent Pole Shelter because I got caught having a sip from my bottle that I had in my pocket, and the consul told me, give me that. I said, not you. And he said, give it to me. So I pulled the bottle out, finished it, and I threw it at him. And I ran out of there, and they put my picture. They take your picture when you get there. Do not readmit. That's how bad it is when you're not allowed back in San Vincent Pole Shelter. So I was living in the streets. Going to Neil Feelgood place where you pay a quarter and you can take a bath and you pay a quarter and they let you use the washing machine and make a phone call and communicate with your family if you want to. All the homeless pushing the carts. There's a whole bunch of carts parked in front of the place. Going in there, meeting people, let's smoke a joint here, keep hook cover for me, smoking that. Hey, I got a little bottle here, taking a swig. That was my life. And then waiting until 9 o'clock at night when you can sleep in the sidewalk, according to San Diego rules. And then I would go there, set up my place in the sidewalk, and then waiting for the San Diego Charger van to come by and bring pizza and hot soup. And every once in a while, when I wanted a real good meal, there's a place down there close to Invisible Shelter where if you go in and you listen to a two-hour sermon, they'll give you a full meal. So we'd go in there and try to stay awake for 2 hours, and then get a mucha free meal. That's how bad it was. Now, this is a guy not to brag about it, but I had it going on for a while there. If you did, in 92, if you did a line of cocaine in La Jolla between all Avantes and Prospect, you were putting money in my pocket. I had that market cornered. So now we go back to the ranch. I walk into the ranch. All these people say hi. I'm going in with jailhouse mentality. I'm at the chow line the first morning, and somebody burps in front of me, and so I reach over. I'm going to smack him because he disrespected me. And this old man, it's true, he holds me back. He goes, "Hey, George, no, you don't do that here." "What do you mean you don't do here?" I'm waiting for who do I have to chin check? Who do I have to check in to show that, you know, I'm one of the tough guys? I'm not going to, you know, I come from prison. I come from doing federal time. I don't believe that there's such thing as a recovery happy house. And they tell me, "No, calm down." It's true. It was the first one. First night, I was at the ranch. I'm looking up at the stars. I'm looking at all these stars. And I haven't forgotten all the stars. Now I was in the Navy, and I'd seen them all the time out to sea. But I've forgotten. And I realized why. Because most of the time, after I got kicked out of the Navy, I was walking around with my head down. So I'm telling it, hey, I'm leaving here in this day, and I am going to date this girl. I'm going to live with this girl, and I'm going to work here. I had everything planned. And it told me, kick back and relax. Not one of those things came through. And thank God. Because I'm here to tell you that I got to the ranch, and my first intention was 30 days clean and sober so I can, you know, get my brain together, and then go and get an ounce and start selling and drinking again and all that stuff. Something happened to me at the ranch. I kept hearing a message. There was a guy, a speaker, that came to speak. J.J. Anderson. A lot of you guys know him. And he came to speak, and he shared. And he said stuff that is still with me today. So that's what I'm hoping that has happened here today. I'm hoping to say stuff that might stick with somebody in here. He showed me. He told me, suit up and show up. He told me, I did this, this, and this, and that. And this is the job that I have today. Now, when he told me the job he had today, I was speaker, I did not have plans to work it like that way, but I like what he had to say. And he was a model for what to do. And today I have the same job that he had when he spoke at the ranch. Okay? Things like that. I went. I remember Big Book Rich going to him with about 30 days of sobriety and feeling like I wanted to leave because there was something wrong with me. And then he explained to me. He goes, "George, when was the last time that your life was in chaos? Been a couple days. And when was the last time that you were on top of the world? It's been a couple days. So you can say, we can say that you're having a normal day?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, you're not used to having that many normal days in a row. And that's the reason you feel so edgy. That's the reason. You have to get used to it. Life, it's about normality. It's about dealing with things and not making a chaos out of it. About accepting your situation." Thank you. That made me stay at least one more day. And the next day, I heard a different message. I've heard so many messages in podiums from people who have 5 days sober to people who have 40 days sober. You know? I went to the ranch, and I had this denial. When they started talking about alcoholic, because the Freedom Ranch is all about the 12 steps and all about the big book. And the first 90 days, they wanted you to go through the first 5 steps. And they started talking about that. I could swear that somebody was looking at my bio and talking about it. And we come out of the classroom and say that he's talking about me. And then the next guy was like, "Oh, no, he's talking about me." Everybody was arguing who he was talking about. And then I realized what a blanket cover that is. When you talk about one alcoholic, you're talking about every one of them. It was a meeting that I learned so many things, some of them funny, some of them hurt. I had to do the hardest thing I've ever done. Alcoholic Anonymous made me do the hardest thing I've ever done, and I've done a lot of hard things. and that was to look at myself and realize that I have no reason to drink and use other than the fact that I wanted to. I had choices. AA introduced me to a way of life through the 12 steps that has changed everything. And I'll tell you, the first three steps were easy for me to do. And I learned this from Larry, and I like to say, at the third step, up at the ranch, I made a deal with God. God, please take away the obsession of drinking and using, and in return, I will do your bidding. In almost 12 years, not one of us failed each other. He has been there for me every time, every moment I have, because I'm going to tell you, I'm still in the same pink cloud I was when I was at the ranch. And people go like, oh, you got to get ready because one of these days life is going to push you off that pink cloud. Have a pink parachute. My sponsor told me, fuck that pink parachute. Get rid of it. The only way you're going to come off that pink cloud is if you drink again. So I got rid of my parachute, and because if I drink again, I really don't care about the pink cloud. So why worry about that parachute? So I'm still in the pink cloud. I still have the passion that I had when I was at the ranch. The ranch, I did the first three steps. Then, of course, that famous four step, the one that everybody thought, oh, that's so hard. I did part of my first fifth step, Big Book Rich. He had black hair when I did that. Now, of course, he doesn't. I'm going to tell you something about my fifth step that I like to share in meetings, and that is that some of us make mistakes through life. I am not about to hurt myself, and I'm not about to put a fifth step and a friend or a family member that's going to keep them in there. There's certain things we've done that the law would still frown on me. And I'm sorry, I'm not about to share that with an alcoholic or drug addict that has, you know, I don't care how much sobriety you have. You don't know if tomorrow he's going to pick up again and get in trouble and decide to trade information. So, but the fifth step, share with God and another human being. The exact nature of you wrong. I had to get rid of it. I drove a car all the way to Arizona. Got to Arizona, and I called AA Central and said, hey, I'm looking for a meeting. I'm in the corner such and such. Oh, there's one right around the corner. I went to a meeting there. I parked a block away. I went to a meeting. I heard people share. A guy by the name of George shared something that I liked. So after the meeting, I went up to say, hey, George, my name is George. You got a minute? I would like to do a fifth step with you. He goes, really? Where are you from? None of your fucking business. So he looked at me and he laughed and he goes, let's go to the coffee house. So we went to the coffee house and we prayed. And we got to the fifth step and I shared everything. I spilled everything to another human being. He goes, by all God, I'm going to do what the big book says. I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do and I have to get rid of it. So I told him everything. We stopped. We cry. We laugh. We prayed again. And then we walked out of the coffee house, we shook hands, and he goes, well, George, I have one advice to give you. He goes, the next time you go to an AA meeting to pick up a stranger to do a fifth make sure he's not a retired police officer. My knees got really weak. He goes, but don't worry, that's between us. I said, sure. Where you park, none of your business. I waited for him to leave, and then after he leaves, I walked the block a couple times, okay, got in the car, and drove back to San Diego. My fifth step is done completely. I have nothing to hide because I share with another human being. It doesn't say he's got to be your sponsor, he's got to be your best friend. It says another human being. So, fifth step done. I moved along the steps pretty quick because I approach my sobriety the same way I approach my drinking and using days, 100%. So it's the only way. If you get anything from me today, it's that you realize that You have to do this and do it quick. Don't sit on it. The fourth step is not that complicated. You write about it. Oh, I need to think. No, you don't need to think. It's stuff that is bothering you. If it's not bothering you, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to dig deep in there to look for it. And later on, because the big book tells us, well, if something pops up, you're watching a movie and something happens, you go, oh, shit, I forgot about that. I didn't write about that. You write about it. You call your sponsor and you share about it. You know? But move along. And that's what I did. That's what they taught me. So I'm doing my steps. I finish. I'm told that I'm the only step that requires, except, you know, give yourself about an hour to think about your fifth step. And then move on. Again, Rich gave me the advice. I cannot spend an hour in my head by myself. I don't know what an hour of peace in my head is. You know, if you could go in there, you'd see how dirty and how much spider webs and how weird it is in there. I don't go in there by myself. I only go in there with my sponsor. You know, so because I couldn't give myself a full hour, I was trained to give yourself 10 hours here. I mean, 10 minutes here. 10 minutes there, when you're taking a shower, another 10 minutes, and make it an hour. You don't have to sit the whole hour because my brain doesn't stay quiet for an hour. It just doesn't work like that. So I go about it and move on with my steps, and then 8 steps comes about. That's a long list. And I need to make it right. There's people that I cannot apologize to. I brought a lot of misery to a lot of people. And that will never leave me. I was making available a substance to people that ruined their life. How many fathers I ruined, how many mothers I ruined by making this substance available to them in the quantities that I was making it. I can't ever make amends to that. So I sat down in the casino up at the Freedom Ranch by myself with old Chester, the old dog we had there, the only thing that would get close to me. And I came up with a plan. I made a deal with God. God, you know I want to make these amends, and I would make them impossible, but I can't. So, again, I will be a service to you if you allow me to call these amends made. And he did. And today, I do as much service as possible. Again, from Larry. I hate to give him credit for anything, you know, from Larry. If you ask yourself, are you doing enough for the alcoholic and drug addict that's suffering in and out of his rooms? The answer is no. Okay? It doesn't matter how much I do for AA. So, I do stuff, and I don't want to pad my resume, but just an example of things that I do, so hopefully you'll do that. I do stuff like, I teach a relapse prevention class every second Saturday of the month at the Freedom Ranch starting next month. Wednesdays at Wayback. I'm in plans to teach the same thing at Salvation Army and House of Metamorphosis. I volunteer my free time to feed the homeless. Why? Because I was once there. On Facebook the other day, I reposted it. It says, I don't give because I have a lot. I give because I know what it is to be with nothing. Okay? I have still way too many shortcomings right now to call myself cured, but I am in the process of it. And this is by the spirituality. When I got to the ranch, I was totally spiritually bankrupt. I was brought up Catholic because I was about this small when somebody grabbed me and put some water in my hand and said, you're Catholic. I had no say-so. AA introduced me to a God, a loving, caring God, not one the Catholics used to tell me about, you know, that scared me. So using that God, and when I say God, I got to emphasize, it's capital G, small O, small D. If you look at the definition of that in the dictionary, it says your creator. And I don't see in there nowhere where there's a capital G, capital O, capital drunk, or D, initial for group of drunks or good old direction. I don't see that there. And the big book says capital G, small o, small d. Your creator. I don't care if it's Martians that put us in here and they're training us, or it's Thor, if it's a guy up in the cloud, Moses, I don't care. I know that I have a loving God. Me and my God have a real good connection. Not one morning I don't wake up in my nice condo, my nice bed, and say, thank you, God, for another day clean, sober, and keep an eye on me. You know, I need a lot of help. With that said, I got about 10 sponsors. I am so sick that I need a lot of help. And I hate to say this, but I called just about everybody in recovery my sponsor. Because I've always been open about my recovery. I feel that it's my duty as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to improve my situation and to show others. I don't dress the way I dress or drive what I drive. Yeah, my ego's involved in it, but like I said, you know, I need to get a cut every once in a while for that. That's my sponsor's responsibility. He makes sure that I can take it down. I take my ego down. But I do it because I want people to show that there's hope, that if a wino, goat, or drunk like me can pick himself up and do what I did. I went to the ranch for 4 months. People, I stayed there for 7 years. Some of us are sicker than others. The difference between staff in a recovery home and residents is the residents get well and get to go home. Okay? The best thing that I did, my first job at the Freedom Ranch, and I feel that I was getting overpaid, unlike Larry, we, as a volunteer staff, you get a pack of cigarettes a day, plus room and board. My second job at the Freedom Ranch as a weekend monitor was $80 a week plus room and board and cigarettes. With $80 a week, I bought a Ford station wagon with plastic hubcaps that belonged to. Great. I ended up buying a small little boat, a skiff with a 6-horse engine on it. I went fishing every day. Little by little, I kept growing. Situations keep happening. Now, the one thing that I was told in Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no such thing as luck. It's preparation meeting opportunity. A lot of people have opportunities, but they're not prepared to take advantage of it. So while I was at the ranch as a volunteer staff, I dressed for my next job, not the one that I had there. I already have that job. So dress for the next job. Improve your situation. I went to school, got this freaking credential that says I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. Bad thing about it, good thing about it is that the day they were teaching sensitivity, I missed that day. So that made me a real good manager for the nut house that the Freedom Ranch is at. I ended up as manager of San Diego Freedom Ranch, believe it or not. One day, the board calls me in and said, here, your house manager. I said, what? He goes, you realize the nut that you're giving this keys to? I said, yeah. Do you realize the nuts that are giving it to you? So I said, okay, here we go. 7 years into it, I had the itch. I left there, and because my spirituality was strong enough to withstand some punches that I was going to receive later on, I took the chance because I had the support group. The best thing they did for an alcoholic like me is a cell phone. How many times I've been in a situation that I have a thought, and I've called a friend in AA and share with them that thought, telling them myself. Most of the time we just laugh about it, and the thought goes away. Sometimes we cry about it. While I was at the ranch in my last year, I was diagnosed with kidney disease. I lost my kidneys. As a matter of fact, I'm on the transplant waiting list right now. Anybody's got O that wants O blood that wants to kick a kidney? I'll make fun. The doctor said, you got any friends? I said, I have a whole bunch of friends, but they're all alcoholic and drug addicts. They're shot out. Not too many of them can kick down a kidney, you know. So I started taking some medication, going through the hard things. I left the ranch. Launched my own business, Sobriety Advisory Services, with the help of some real good friends in the private sector. and then I launched a treatment facility up in Valley Center. And everything was going pretty damn good. I was rolling in regards to financial. A lot of things happened to me during that time. First of all, my mom passed away. I don't think that if I would have not had the support group, the friends, and the knowledge that AA had given me at the time, I would have survived that. I have a beautiful family in Puerto Rico. My mom and pops passed away. My mom passed away. I called from the ranch after 30 days because Huffaker, the manager there, called me in and said, "Hey, you need to call Puerto Rico." I said, "No, I can't. Different hours." He goes, "Well, come in tomorrow, make the phone call, or pack your bags, you're out of here." Okay, so I walked in, made a phone call, and I found out that my dad had passed away 4 years before that. Now, I've been missing in action for about 8 years. My family was looking for me. They forgot to check the federal jail system. They checked everything else. So I remember hanging the phone and thinking, F it. What the purpose of life if things like this going to happen to you? Mike put his arm around me and said, we will love you, bro. You will get through this together. I went up to the famous cross of the Freedom Ranch and cried and cried and cried. And then the phone rang in the office. It was my sister. His sister called. We talked. Said, "Okay, we're not going to tell mom that you're doing the right thing now for 30 days so you don't break her heart again. She already went through dad's thing. But, you know, we'll tell her eventually. You got to prove to us that you're doing right." So I got through that. I've gotten through the dialysis part. I do dialysis 3 times a week from 6 to midnight on Sunday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. My life is beautiful. I love what I do. I'm passionate about life. AA has given me a reason for. I come to this meeting often because I see a lot of passion. You know, plus a lot of ranchers here too. I see what AA has done for people. And I want to show what AA has done for me. But if there's one thing that I need to get across from people, is you need to be passionate about your sobriety. Carry it. Like I said, I am not proud to be an alcoholic and a drug addict, but I'm damn proud to be a member of this club. You know, this is nothing but winners in here. You can come in here, if you put everybody's sobriety from the guy who's got 90 days to guys in here that got 40-some years sobriety, that's a whole bunch of sobriety. We went to dinner last week, last Saturday, me, Damien, Tony, and Chief, we went to dinner. We had a great time eating steaks. Damien getting bad service. And we had a great time. And it was all recovery talk. It was all passionate about how our lives had improved. I will leave here tonight, and I will go to dinner with a couple friends to Rubio's tonight. Tonight is Rubio's turn. And we will talk about recovery, about what it does. If you are not passionate about recovery, you're missing something out. There's something missing on you. You got to find it. If you want to talk about recovery with me, I'm there at 724. My phone number is public phone number. I work today, people, this gutter drunk, I work today for the Public Defender's Office. I'm a substance abuse assessor. I have an office in downtown. I got a government card. 2-time convicted felon. I still can't carry a gun. Been there and done that. But it all changed when I surrendered 100%. The only step we have to do 100% is step one. And then we work on the rest. Because I did that is that I got where I got today. And because I am grateful. My attitude has to be about being grateful. When I'm grateful for what I have, when I have a good gratitude, my sobriety level. When I start getting low on being grateful, I can see where my sobriety starts fluctuating. So I have to be grateful because what I have today is beautiful. I have a new life. I have my family in my life. My brother, Alfonso in Puerto Rico, the smartest guy I ever known. That asshole got drunk once. And he said, I don't like that. And he quit. You know, Joe taught me before I leave real quick. The difference between a normie and an alcoholic. A normie walks through by a hole in the wall and sticks his hand and gets bit and pulls his hand out and walks away. An alcoholic will walk by, puts his hand in and gets bit, pulls out and sticks his head in to figure out what the fuck happened. That's what we do. Okay? Thank you for calling on me. Love you guys. God bless.